Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming. I would really like to try and give you as clear and full a picture as I can of the last 4 days that we've spent together and hopefully give you a bit of a feel for it. Some of you will know there's 22 dioceses present. We've noted it on the page there where we talk about prayers offered for the Ukraine. Among those, we saluted particularly Archbishop Malcolm McMahon as the new Archbishop of Liverpool, and we welcomed Bishop Mark O'Toole as the newly ordained Bishop of Plymouth. What we concentrated on, or what I would like to speak about first, is our prayers for the Ukraine, for the Ukrainian people. Because one of the members of the Bishops' Conference is Bishop Chleb, who is the Eparch of the Ukrainian Church in Great Britain. And I, for the first time, I think, in the history of the Bishops' Conference, yesterday we celebrated Mass according to the Ukrainian rite. So we celebrated the Divine Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. So it was a very moving experience, actually. He led the liturgy, obviously, but the Ukrainian Catholic Church is part of the Catholic Church, and we all concelebrated, and it's a very, very different liturgy from the one that we are used to. And it just seems so appropriate, as the newspapers are full of the difficulties faced by the people, especially in the east of the vast country of the Ukraine. We were praying in the way that the Catholics there would pray for them in this particular liturgy. And if anybody wants a copy of this, I think there might be a few around, because it gives you quite a different feel to entering the mystery of God, receiving the gifts of God, offering our lives to God, and seeking God's blessing. So that was a very remarkable moment. To stay on that theme, even though we're the bishops of England and Wales, obviously our concerns go more widely. So we heard from Bishop John Arnold, who, after our last meeting, went to the Philippines and went to those areas that had been devastated by the tsunami. We wanted to, through you, express our thanks to the Catholic community for their generosity. We heard about some of the terrible conflict that is going on even now in the South Sudan, because Bishop William Kenny had recently been to the South Sudan. And even while we were in Leeds, we heard of the bombing of the Mother of Mercy Catholic Hospital in the Nuba Mountains. I don't think anybody has reported this. No newspaper has reported the fact that a hospital which provides care to 150,000 people annually was bombed and was put out of action, basically. And this is just another action in that conflict in the South Sudan, which is, for the most part, forgotten. And I want to take this opportunity just to draw your attention to that. We heard from another bishop again, Bishop Arnold, who'd been to Burma and told us a bit about the experience and the situation of the church in Burma. We reflected on the international conference, which it had been our privilege to organise in the Holy See, on human trafficking, and the emergence from that group of a formal agreement between Catholic leaders and police chiefs of 24 different countries to carry on working together to combat human trafficking. That joint declaration and undertaking will find its next expression in the autumn here in London, when the same participants will be invited to meet again. They call themselves the Santa Marta Group, and the invitations this time will be a joint invitation between the Home Office, the Metropolitan Police, and the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. And that, in some ways, unusual combination of police and Catholic Church and politicians working together closely is the kind of thing we'd like to see replicated in other countries. And obviously, from the point of view of the Catholic Church, major players in this work are women religious. And maybe that relates to something that Christopher will tell you about later. We also gave some attention to the situation in the Holy Land. And in particular, we are going to invite every Catholic parish in the country to hold an hour's prayer before the Blessed Sacrament on the 25th of May between 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock on that Sunday afternoon to coincide to the very time when Pope Francis is in Bethlehem and will be meeting the Christian communities in Bethlehem. So again, we wanted to give very clear and profound support in that way in reaching out in prayer. A second thing that I'd like to touch on very quickly is the commemorations of the First World War. And you'll see the formal statement that we put out on the back of the page that you have. And the undertaking that we are giving as the Catholic community to the national commemorations is that we will do what we will do, and that is to pray for the dead. That we believe is a fundamental duty of a Catholic and certainly of Catholic Christianity. And there are these six major commemorative days. And we have given the undertaking that bishops will celebrate Requiem Masses in their cathedrals on or near these six key dates. You don't want me to read them out because they're there. And at the same time, we ask Catholic parishes to mark these important anniversaries on the nearest Sunday by offering Mass for all who died and to pray in the intercessions for those currently serving in the armed forces and for peace. And there were some very lovely concrete suggestions as to how parishes can enter into these commemorative events. So, for example, in the Archdiocese of Liverpool, they're inviting young children to study the war memorials and to make note of the names of the people who are the fallen from the Great War, to begin to research who they were, where their families are now, what is the family story of those who gave their lives in the Great War. And certainly here in this diocese and in the Midlands, there are one or two of our historians researching the stories of the priests who served as chaplains in the Great War, so that we can, as it were, fill out the commemorations of those who had died with very concrete and human stories as well. And the next point I would like just to talk a little about was our discussion on the forthcoming synods of bishops. Now, forgive me if I take a little time to do this, but I think it's very important that, and I think it's my duty to try and set the scene correctly for this period in the life of the Church. The title of the synods is Pastoral Challenges to the Family in the Context of Evangelization. So it is immediately cast in the framework that Pope Francis is proposing for the Church, and that is one of looking outwards. The process is very clear. It's over 2 years. It started already. It includes two synod of bishops. The first synod of bishops takes place in October 2014, and that is to, as it were, try and understand and analyse the situation that we face as clearly as possible. The second synod in October 2015 is to fashion the responses. So this is not a speedy process of a decision about what some people view as one or two key issues. Let me point out a couple of the things that have already taken place, which begin to, I think, put more flesh on the process in the mind of the Holy Father. I was very struck, for example, by his homily at the canonization of St. John Paul II and St. John the 23rd. Just think, he had a live audience of, what, 700,000 people. He had a world audience of millions. And he chose to speak for 7 minutes. That was all. And he spoke basically about one theme. He spoke about their holiness and these synods of bishops. He spoke of Pope John the 23rd as, in the Italian phrase he used, the guida guidata, the guided guide. So he was the guide of the church who understood himself to be guided by the Holy Spirit. And then he spoke of John Paul II. You could think of 1,000 titles to give Pope John Paul II, but he chose one. He said, this is the Pope of the family. So in my visual imagination, he took these two new saints and placed them as markers for the work of the church over the next 2 years. One marker, that we be guided by the Holy Spirit. The second marker, that we are faithful to the teaching of the Saint John Paul II. But what's fascinating to me is he puts these markers not so much in a straight line, but there's kind of one over there and one over there, and he's beginning to sketch out the avenue, the road down which we have to go. I think the second interesting part of the process so far was the consistory of cardinals that took place in February. Now, at that point, I was not a member of the College of Cardinals, but we were invited to be there. At the beginning of that meeting, Pope Francis said there were two things in his mind. One was, and I quote, a deepened theology of the family. And secondly, a pastoral care that is intelligent, courageous, and full of love. So again, he's setting out the pathway. I think there were 6 points made during that that consistory. And they're on a separate sheet. Just a minute. I'm doing this quite on purpose. I know it's a little long, but I do think these things begin to spell out what we face. I'm sorry, I thought I had this all together. Here we are. These were the preoccupations of the cardinals. Firstly, that we start from a keen awareness of the distress of many. A keen awareness that people carry a burden of failure in their lives. And often that sense of failure is deeply rooted in themselves. We recognize a desire to start again, a desire for acceptance in the church, and a sense that people speak about of being punished. Secondly, they spoke about a concern for truth, the truth of the unity and indissolubility of marriage. They spoke of the heroic witness given by many people, by the majority, to let, as it were, the light of their marriage shine, and to point constantly to the grace that's needed if that's going to happen. They recognised that this truth is a real challenge to the way modern society understands the human person. We could come back to that if you like. The third thing that the cardinals had was a concern for the freedom that is necessary if people are entering marriage in the truly Christian and fully human sense. Do people understand marriage as seen in the life of faith when they celebrate a marriage in a Catholic church? Do they have a sense that the indissolubility of marriage is something that they hope for? Or are they really committed to it? What is the sense of consent that people give and the commitment that they give? A fourth point was a concern for love in the pastoral care, the accompaniment. Many cardinals wanted to say, we must not talk of a category of people, of the divorced and the remarried. They're not a category of people. They are people, individuals, struggling with difficult experiences in their lives. And many references were made to the paragraph in Pope John Paul II's document on the family, where he said it was a duty on the pastors of the church to distinguish well between the different situations of people. And there was quite a lot of talk about discretion as the mother of all virtues. A fifth thing that was there was a concern for justice, that procedures of the church, especially in annulment procedures, are made more available, that the evidence is more easily accessible, always with a concern for establishing the truth of the validity of a first marriage. And then there was the theme of how we understand the Eucharist and what the role of the Eucharist is in the life of the Christian and how we understand it both as a witness and as a remedy. So these are actually quite profound and important themes in the church. So we talked about those. We then surfaced our own concerns as a bishops' conference. And again, I would say that there were four of those. And out of the responses that bishops received from their people in their diocese, and each bishop spoke about what he had heard, because it was an exercise of listening to people's experience, there were three quotations that I highlighted and I believe capture the things that we bishops were concerned about. The first quotation was very simple. The church is behind the times in its teaching. And all that lies behind that sentence, that somehow the church's teaching is to be judged by the times, that it ought to be up-to-date teaching. It ought to be a teaching shaped by the experience of people in any given place. So there's a challenge there, and that was one of the major things we were talking about, is how do we be faithful to the gift of Christ's teaching and interpret and present it in this age? And that's where, again, we came back and we spent quite a bit of time talking about an understanding of what it is to be a person. And there was a phrase used, you know, that understanding of human nature in our society has become very plastic. It's become very flexible. You know, it can be this or that. Even to points of gender, understanding of gender can be seen in a flexible way as well. A second quotation is this simple one. Don't judge, teach. And that's a quotation that is an appeal to us to accompany people very sensitively. But it's not just don't judge. It's don't judge, but teach. So that spells out very clearly that we all are still on a continuing journey. And for that journey, we need teachers. And then the third quotation, which again captures some of the discussion that we had, was this. We need to uphold marriage, but create space for where it fails. And I think that personal expression from one person who wrote in to us captures, as it were, the heart of the journey that the church has to explore over the next 2 years. I think that's my introduction for those items. And now Christopher is going to speak just a little bit about the report that we received on vocations in the church today.
Thank you. You'll see there's a short statement you've got there on your chairs and a summary of some statistics. I think there's two dimensions. This one is the actual statistics, and the other is obviously what this indicates about some of the realities going on in the life of the church at the moment. So firstly, the statistics. It's the second year running that we've had nearly 100 men and women who've entered convents, seminaries and religious houses across England and Wales in 2013. And that global figure, represents a significant upturn in numbers compared to where we were, say, 10 years ago. So that's very encouraging. I think what it means is that we have stopped the sense that year on year the numbers of entry go down, down, down. We've managed to bottom it out and slightly pull it up again. I'm well aware that these figures do not, as you'll see from the graph there quite clearly, don't represent the numbers going back into, say, the 1980s. But I think the key message is that we have stopped the thing declining inevitably and have started to turn it round. I think you'll also see that the numbers will now go up and down. But the good news is they're not only going down year on year. So I think that, you know, when we come back in 12 months' time, we'll find that maybe some of these numbers are not as high as they were. But I think the key thing is that we've stopped the idea that they only go down. And I think that's really, really encouraging. Secondly, if you then look at why this is, well, under God, I think the first thing is that, of course, people pray more about vocations. You could say that the more they see that Father's not going to be replaced, the more they're encouraged to pray for vocations. But that's viewing it rather negatively. More positively, I think there's been more energy put into saying to people that God responds to our prayers. And I think there's lots of things like the invisible monastery that somebody created where you can sign up online to pray for vocations and so on. And within that context, one of the ways that God works, of course, is that when we pray for something, God has this way of saying, well, why don't you answer your own prayer? Or why don't you become the answer to the prayer? And I think there are more and more people who are creating contexts in which to help young people discover God's will in their lives. So typically, rather than going up to a young person saying, you look a likely lad, would you like to go to seminary? Which on the whole produces the reaction, no, when you put it bluntly like that. But if you say, would you like help to discover God's call in your life? Would you like to figure out what you want to do in life? Then they say, yeah, that'd be really helpful. And then they might say, gosh, I've discovered that God does want me to go to seminary. So in other words, what we're finding is that young people want help to discover what to do with their lives, and that church groups and individuals can work to help them do that. There's been a lot of work by diocesan vocations directors and religious vocations directors that when somebody comes to them, to make sure that the first message is, we're here to help you discover God's will. We're not here to recruit you. Secondly, that then leads into groups being developed around this theme. And there are a number of different groups, growing numbers of groups. And as that number of groups has grown, so the number of people entering seminary and religious life has grown. But so too, we find the number of committed lay people grows. Now, there is some evidence too, but I hesitate to put too much emphasis on it, that the number of people getting married in Catholic churches has also stopped declining. The national figure of people getting married in church is going down, but the number of getting married in Catholic churches has gone up slightly. Somebody said to me, well, is that all due to migrants and so on? It's very hard to know. But as I understand it, most people from Eastern Europe who are Catholic go back home to get married rather than get married here. So there is, it seems, a sense that among some Catholics, younger Catholics especially, there is a sense of discerning a vocation as something that has increased generally within the church. And within that, we see an increase in vocations to priesthood and religious life.
Also on the sheet you have is a statement which we issue today about care for the elderly and vulnerable people. Obviously, this is made in the context of emerging proposals yet again to legalise assisted suicide. And you see, we choose a quotation from Pope Francis where he says, the gravest deprivation experienced by the aged is not the weakening of one's physical body or the disability that may result from this. Rather, it's abandonment, exclusion, and the deprivation of love. So we commend very strongly the work of carers and doctors, nurses, chaplains, social workers, and all the organisations who strive to affirm the dignity of every person at every stage of their life. And for that reason, we remain opposed to any form of assisted suicide, as well as affirming the support for those who translate love into practical care for the elderly in our community. And then finally, we had some re-elections of the officers of the Bishops Conference. That includes Archbishop Peter Smith and myself. A re-election of the department chairman and some of the other roles in the conference. And we also agreed that when Monsignor Marcus Stock has finished his 5-year term of office, that his successor will be Father Chris Thomas, a priest of Nottingham Diocese, who at present is the parish priest of one of the out-of-town parishes, parish of Corpus Christi. He's the finance and administrator delegate of the bishop for the diocese. He's moderator of the Curia, and he's the Catholic chaplain at Nottingham University. So we're very grateful to Nottingham Diocese for permitting Father Chris Thomas to come and work with the conference from November next.